Welcome to Tech in the Right Direction, the podcast. This week, I'll be speaking with Rupal Parikh. Rupal is a veteran in the technology space, from tech startups to Fortune 500 companies. As the head of a global pre-sales team at SAP, Rupal and her team help customers achieve efficiency gains and process improvements across their critical enterprise incentive management systems through SAP's sales performance management portfolio. Rupal is also an advocate of the pre-sales function. She advises technology startups on best practices in building pre-sales teams and creating value-added pre-sales technology to master the craft. Rupal is also passionate about helping elevate and connect women in their professional journeys. She is New York City's chapter director for WNorth, a membership network that brings together women at a high level to share their networks, knowledge, and experience. Welcome to the show, Rupal. I am so excited to have you on.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm really happy to be here today.
Great. Let's get started. So, as a woman in tech, can you share your career journey and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, actually, great question. So my journey, believe it or not, started back in middle school when I was offered an opportunity to participate in an internship at a tech company. Really exciting. I was selected as part of a program to promote minorities and girls in technology. The company was previously, it was called Bell Communications Research, which was, in short, a research and development consortium established by the Bell Regional Holding Companies back when they were separated from AT&T. So I was exposed to computers and programming and all these types of various research. And I participated in an internship for a few summers through middle school and high school. I learned all about programming and you know, exposed to research that ultimately was part of the foundation to many telecommunications technologies that we rely on today. So, you know, when it came time to decide what to do in college, it seemed obvious I would probably just major in computer science. So that's what I did. And in fact, you know, I graduated during a recession. Many of my engineering major colleagues couldn't get jobs, but I got one right away, which was, I was fortunate. And my first job out of college was a software company in tech support. And that's where I got exposure to dabbling in application software and where I learned how to speak to customers, which became later on a very valuable skill later in my career. Uh-huh. So I honed that skill further down the line at various companies and from Oracle to Silicon Valley startups. And I learned lots of different application and database technologies. And then if you fast forward kind of to 2006, I joined a company where I went from individual contributor to kind of a senior VP role. And over the course of 12 years, I was there and we got acquired by my present employer. And that's where I've been. So this will be kind of year six, still running a global team and still somewhat dabbling in application technology. Overall, I'm really enjoying the journey.
That's great. Wow. That's such an important skill to be able to speak to customers. And I'm so glad you realized that early on, because a lot of people in tech sometimes have challenges with that.
Exactly right. That's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you do a lot of pre-sales work. Tell us more about why this is so important.
Yeah. So it's for most of my career, I've been in that role. And it's called by many names, pre-sales or sales consultants or sales engineers, solution advisors, the list goes on. I'm not sure if anyone really knows when or how the role was created in the industry. I think it's probably a long time ago. And it was created to provide support to sales reps during a sales cycle. And pre-sales provides pretty valuable technical expertise, like product knowledge and resources, to ensure that the sales representatives are prepared to effectively sell their products or services, right? So let's say the company is selling software or hardware or manufacturing equipment or medical devices, you know, you name the industry. The sales reps themselves focus on meeting their revenue targets and closing deals, right? That's what they do. Pre-sales provides invaluable support during the sales cycle. They help sell the vision and help sell the solution, because they have what I like to call an artful combination of technical prowess and selling skills. And this really helps to build the bridge to the customer or prospect, because they're becoming the trusted advisor, right? Pre-sales, they're not necessarily on a quota. So customers tend to establish a different kind of trust with them, right? They're a little more trusting, you know, they know that they're going to give you the technical information versus just the sales answer. Mm-hmm. So I really mm-hmm. love the role, yeah, in that sense.
I think that's so important.
That's why I'm still doing it today.
Right, yeah. That's so important because the technical part really builds that trust. You know, if you know the technology behind it and can explain that as part of your pre-sales process, you're going to get the deal. You know, it's just so much better. Yep.
Exactly.
No, that's great. That's so great. And we know salespeople are always motivated by their comp plan, right? Mm-hmm. So they always say it's like, you know, they're monitored by this.
Right.
Can you share with us how companies can create an incentive strategy to retain and grow their top salespeople? Also, mm-hmm. any best practices around pay for performance?
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic. I love talking about it. And, you know, before I begin, I just want to state that, you know, the opinions and views that I'm about to express are mine and not necessarily those of my employer.
Yes.
So you may have heard the phrase salespeople are coin operated.
That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, there you go. Coin operated or incentive drives behavior, which mm-hmm. has other applications beyond sales. But let's stick to the sales part of it. But, you know, basically it means, yeah, salespeople are motivated by their comp plan. They are motivated by how they get paid because that's the driving force behind how they will do their job, how mm-hmm. they perform in their job. And does it pay for them to overperform, right? Because mm-hmm. if they hit their target, will they just coast for the rest of the year or does the company pay extra when they outperform? So pay for performance in the simplest terms is a pay structure that employees use to pay their people based on how they perform in their job. And this type of structure exists pretty much everywhere you look in every industry. And how does an organization that sells products or services improve their top line? Well, they sell more product or they gain new customers or they add more product lines. There are many other ways, but some of the most obvious ways, I think, are that they move the needle. Some of the ways that move the needle the farthest, I would say, all depend on the company's sales force. So if a company's salespeople aren't motivated properly, if their comp plans aren't designed effectively, the company won't get optimal performance. And even worse, right, if comp plans are designed poorly, this actually has a demotivating effect on individuals mm-hmm. and creates the wrong behaviors. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what I've learned in many of my years at SAP and an effective incentive strategy will take into consideration lots of different factors, right? Who are the sellers or revenue generators in the organization? It's important to first understand who generates the revenue in the company and what roles do they hold, right? How many are there? Because not all revenue generators are sellers and not all sellers are revenue generators, right? It's a kind of a nebulous term these days. And I think you also have to understand what are you selling. The company has to understand, well, what products or services are they promoting the most? Which ones do they want to promote the most? Salespeople typically have territories. How are these territories being defined? How are they being assigned? How effectively is geography, skill set, and other attributes taken into consideration? You know, what are the goals or targets? Are those defined from the top down, or is there any refinement from the bottom up? So there's lots of different things that companies take into consideration, but overall, regardless of the role, it's absolutely a motivating factor in terms of, you know, how salespeople perform. The question is, okay, well, how are they getting paid? That's the first question.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Very important.
Yeah, indeed.
And I think it's just human nature, right? It's not even so much it's salespeople. It's just wherever people are paid and incentivized, that's where they lean to.
Exactly, right? And mm-hmm. so the phrase incentive drives behavior really applies to lots of different areas. In fact, I joke with my kids about it. I'm like, well, hey, incentive drives behavior. If you're going to get a reward at the end of this, then it's going to drive your behavior up front. Yes, and it's so true.
And you have to do it with kids too. I mean, I did it with my kids. I know my kids do it with their kids.
Exactly.
It's just the cycle. That's part of life.
Absolutely.
No, that's great.
You're right. It's human nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about what challenges you faced in your career and what have you done to overcome them?
So this is a great question too, because I mean, they're all great questions. You know, getting pitted against your colleagues to create a competitive marketplace in order to identify a winner based on criteria that may or may not be relevant to the jobs and when criteria favors one individual over another, you know, that isn't a great motivating practice for any leader in any company. But right. I was put in that situation and it kind of created confusion for me, uncertainty for my team and a lack of trust, you know, in leadership at all levels. And the list kind of goes on. So, you know, needless to say, I was the one who lost the kind of forced competition. So in that situation, I kind of just decided I'm going to do my job. You know, sure, I'm pitted against my colleague, but I'm just going to go and do my job or the job that I was given at the time. Okay. And, you know, I may have made a different decision today, but in hindsight, that was actually the right move. So I just did the modified job I was given and I did it with everything I had, partially to prove to my leaders that I can do it, but also to prove to myself. And I ended up sacrificing a lot in my personal life, but I performed really well at that job and my leaders noticed and I got promoted and that gave me some really nice momentum and set me up for the next phase in my career. So
great. It's very difficult to do that in that situation. So I give you a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, thank you. And you know, the answer is different for everyone. You know, somebody might ask, well, should I just do that? Should I put my head down and just pull forward? Mm-hmm. And the answer isn't necessarily a clean yes or no. It really depends, mm-hmm. right, on your circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you overcame that very, very well. And I'm sure what did it teach you?
You know, it taught me a couple of things. One, you always have to ask a question if you're not sure. Don't assume you know the answer. Just ask the question. And if you get the answer you're expecting, then what do you have to lose? If you get a different answer from what you're expecting, it could either force you to pivot even more, which eventually will be a life skill that you'll cherish. You know, or if you get the answer you were expecting or, you know, I think it really depends on kind of your mindset at the time, right? And so it definitely taught me to keep an open mind, ask questions, and sometimes look at the bigger picture, because what's right there in front of you might not be the answer. It might be something bigger than that. And I know it's hard advice to give somebody when they're faced with a certain challenge right then and there, but play a little chess with the players that you're given and follow a successful chess move and see where it takes you. You might lose, but sometimes you might win. But the losing part will give you some experience, right?
Every time we lose, we learn, you know, and we should use that as learning ability to take us to that next step. And absolutely. I love what you said about looking at the bigger picture. If you can put yourself into somebody else's shoes and look at it from their lens, it makes a big difference, you know, because from your lens, it looks one way and it might not feel good, you know, but if you have that open mind and look at from the leader's lens and from other people's lens, how does this look? I think you might get a whole new learning experience.
Yeah. And when I asked somebody, what should I do in that situation in my challenging past? And, you know, the advice I got was exactly somebody looking at the bigger picture. And they told me, what if you just did what you're asked to do? Sometimes it's like, oh, why should I just do what I'm asked to do? I don't want to conform. But it's not necessarily conforming. Sometimes you are actually taking your future into consideration and you are taking that next big step. So.
I'm so glad you said that, because sometimes people don't realize that. They think, oh, I'm just giving in and, you know, I'm like a rubber band or, you know, just a pillow that just conforms. But no, you learn from it and it's good. It's good to have that skill.
Right.
Great. 100%. Well, that's great. Yep. So, you know, this podcast is focused around bridging the culture, pay and employment gap for women in tech. What are you seeing in the industry today from your lens?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there are pockets where we are making progress but collectively, I think we still have a way to go.
I agree.
I mean, I'm pleased to see more women in tech roles, such as, you know, data scientists or fintech or software developers. I'd love to see more women in AI and information security. And as far as bridging the gap with pay equity, I don't think we're there yet. There are many examples of women doing the same job and getting paid less. So I think we need to improve there as an ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. While childcare might conceptually be split between both parents these days, I think it's still largely one parent's responsibility, and that can impact the career. And usually it's the woman's responsibility, and it could impact her career. Mm-hmm. And it's still the woman that tends to make the bigger sacrifice. And, you know, I'm sorry for all the examples out there that where that's not true. I'm absolutely sure there are examples where that's not true, but there are lots of examples where that still is true.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And the woman just takes on that responsibility always. Right. We just do that. We're conditioned to do that. We're nurturing. We pull in more towards us than we need to, really.
Yeah. And they still have to be present at work. And they still have to be present in their families. And they still have to be present in running the home. So it's a challenge still. Certain demographics might be better than others, but it's a gap. And it's a moving target that we have to try and chase.
Yeah, I think, you know, anything we can do to help that bridge that gap. I think there's still a big gap, and there's a lot for us to do. But I've realized and through the pandemic that just little things sometimes make a difference. I don't have to boil the entire ocean. I can do one little step. And this podcast is one of them, you know, just to say, okay, by one person at a time, I'm going to make changes and influence. If I influence one woman a day with this podcast, now I've got the numbers, you know, coming in.
I love that. Yeah. You're not about boiling the ocean. It's about raising the awareness step by step. And I think that's key.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. That's so important because we have so much to offer, but we don't give ourselves enough credit. We really don't. And so the more confidence we can give from these sessions, it's so important. And I love the things that you've done because you've really gone through those challenges firsthand and come out, you know, on the better side. So great job.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. And I think it's just so important to keep elevating that message and keep getting some little wins out there for women in this industry. Mm-hmm.
So do you think there's a glass ceiling of leadership for women? If so, what are some of the things women can do to overcome that?
There is a glass ceiling, and the ceiling moves, you know, as mentioned earlier, it's a moving target, and raising awareness is totally the key. Helping elevate and connect women in their professional journeys. What you're doing, I think, is fantastic because, like you said, if you influence one woman at a time with the podcast, they'll influence more women and so on. And that helps them build their brand. You know, it's so important. I'd actually like to share something with our listeners. I am a member of the Women's Professional Leadership Organization called W North. And I'm also city director of their New York chapter. And the organization really strives to help elevate women in professional and leadership roles, just providing great opportunities to connect and mentor and learn and share experiences and helping to bridge the gender and power gap and helps women in executive and leadership roles break that glass ceiling. It really is a forum like many others out there that raises awareness, brings the key topics front and center, you know, gets those important questions asked and establishes stakeholders, right, in the parts of the ecosystem that need to be our force multipliers to get the message out even further.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, that's so true. Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's a tough question now for you. This is something that I struggle with, but again, how do you balance homework? Please share with our listeners what works for you or some ideas that you've implemented that have really made a difference, you know, because we can all learn from this.
Absolutely. And this is a topic that goes way back for me. I am a proud mother of two, a son and a daughter. They're both in college now.
Oh, wow.
So I've got more time on my hands. But when they were in grade school.
Empty nester, huh?
an empty nester. What do I do with my time? When they were in grade school, I should say, that's when I was going through some upheavals at work and I sacrificed a lot of time with my family to be more present at work. You know, I traveled all over the world and wasn't really at home as much as I wanted to be, and also going through a divorce at the same time. So that added exponential challenges. So, you know, I think in hindsight, I should have just been more prescriptive with carving out some time. Let's say, even if I'm, you know, 10,000 miles away in another city, take some time and just open up your mind, meditate. That doesn't mean you have to be spiritual. It just means sit and open up your thoughts. Just sitting quietly, you know, clear your thoughts, regroup with yourself. It gives you clarity to address things that are important and to clear the noise out of your head. That's just noise, because most of the time, we struggle with, okay, there's so much noise, what do I address first? But if I got the noise out of my head, it would have helped me focus on, when I get back home, this is exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to spend this much time with my kids. I'm going to take them here. I'm going to take them there. I'm going to build the bridges that I, you know, should have built before. And I think just setting aside a few minutes a day to do that, of course, you know, just being physically active, and it's just great for health and wellness reasons. Anyone who's struggling with balancing home and career probably are thinking, I have no time to go exercise, but really 5 minutes and just walk around your house and at the same time clear your head. It makes so much difference.
I think little things, you know, you don't need hours and hours to do any of it, but 10 minutes to meditate and just sit with yourself and just clear your head is so important. It gives you so much freedom then for the next thing. It's amazing.
It does. And I think networking is another thing I'll say, just making connections. There are a lot of people out there who are going through similar struggle. So when you find people that are in your camp, they'll help you get through some of the most difficult times. That's what I didn't have. I didn't establish a network, and I wish I had done that. So I think establishing a network of your peers, just anywhere, personal connections, professional connections, you know, mothers or fathers of other kids that your kids are friends with, any connections help you discuss those challenges and
absolutely
understand that you're not the only one going through this.
Yeah, I think that would be a great thing to, I asked you to give advice to our listeners for, you know, joining a career tech, a career in tech, sorry. One of the big things there is to create a network for yourself so that you have people who support you and they're champions for you, whether it's male or female, doesn't matter. And you need both. You do need both. It's really, really important to build that network.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and absolutely right.
People in my, you know, generation may see others that are younger as, we're the ones who are supposed to give the advice, but keep your open mind, keep a mind open, I would say, you know, keep an open mind with who can be in your network, and who can be a sounding board, you know, a listener. And that's very important.
Yeah. So great advice on balancing, because it's really hard, and things that you've learned are great lessons for others not to do, not to take time for themselves, even if it's 10 minutes a day, to focus on meditation, to focus on your network, to focus on the things that are important. If you write down your values and then you realize how they tie into everything you do, it makes a very big difference. You know, I've learned that over the years in business, just to have the values for the business, and then everything you do has to tie to those, you know, whether it's family, it's business, it's ethics, it's all of those things.
Yeah. And don't suffer from imposter syndrome. I think a lot of people are doing that. You have more experience and more credentials than you know, and don't discount them so easily.
Sell yourself short.
Exactly.
Right. Absolutely. Very, very true. Okay, so now this next question is a selfish question, because I'm building my bucket list of places to go. And so where is your most favorite place that you've traveled to, and why?
Oh, so many places. So many amazing places I've traveled to for work. Singapore, Sydney, Arizona, Vancouver, I
love
to
that
say,
you throw Arizona in yes. there. I love that.
One of my favorite places is Arizona, and I have to say Sedona especially. Love the culture and just the vibe, atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Singapore is fantastic. I've been there a few times for work. It's just like a city mm-hmm. and a garden all in one.
Clean, I want to do that.
Vibrant. Yeah, love the culture and the food and the parks. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Have you been to Dubai?
I have not. No, I'd love to go there.
That's another one on my list too. Mm-hmm. Singapore and Dubai are big on my list because I just want to feel that atmosphere, you know.
Yes.
Because I hear it's amazing. So
it's amazing. It's a long flight, but it's worth it. It's worth it.
That's where I have to convince my husband to fly because he does not like long flights. So
yeah. You'll have to find a way to break it up and visit multiple places at once.
yep. Have to do that. That's great. So why is Arizona your favorite or Singapore your favorite? Why? What's the reasons? Because I believe atmosphere is big, and who you're with and what you do is also a big part of why. So tell me what yours is.
So I'll give you as an example, and I'll use both. I'll use Arizona and Singapore. They're so different in terms of just environment, right? Mm-hmm. Arizona, I love that Southwest kind of vibe. It generates to me just this mystical positivity. And when you're in a positive frame of mind, and it may sound cliche, it may sound corny, but when you're in a positive frame of mind, you feel like you can do anything. You feel like there's nothing really holding limits. You back. Yep. You can just go for it. And Singapore, for the same reasons, but it's also vibrant, full of plants. I love plants. I love gardens. Whenever I'm walking through a garden, I get overjoyed. I have about 100 plants in my apartment. And Singapore is like a giant garden. And when I'm there, it's just, you know, the air is so fresh and it makes you really feel very positive. So when you feel positive, you feel like you can do really good things. And especially when you're there traveling for work or personal reasons, it generates a positivity to kind of carry you through your day and your work that you're there for, or your personal issue that you're there, or personal reasons that you're there, not issue, but reasons that you're there for. So it just generates a lot of positivity.
Love that.
And I just think it's well worth the long flight.
Well, Rupal, this has been such a pleasure to talk to you and share your experiences with our listeners. Thank you.
Jennifer.
It's been a pleasure and an honor to have you on my show. So if you could share with our listeners how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah, absolutely. I am active on LinkedIn. Reach out to Rupal Parikh on LinkedIn. I check it often. I'm also active on Instagram for a more personal connection. Rupal Parikh 26 is my handle. Or feel free to just shoot me an email, rparikh26@yahoo.com. And any and all of those ways, I would love to hear from your listeners. And Jennifer, thank you so much for having me. I was honored to be asked to participate and thoroughly enjoyed talking to you today. Thank you so much.
You've been such a pleasure to have on the show. I know our listeners would enjoy listening to you every time. So thank you. It was a pleasure and an honor. Thank you, Rupal.
Likewise, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Tech in the Right Direction. Please take a minute to subscribe or follow so that you never miss an episode. Also, don't forget to like, share, and comment. Thank you. See you next week.
From IT skill enhancements to end user adoption training, Directions Training is your resource to help optimize the effectiveness of your technology investments. Over 500,000 students have taken advantage of our wide selection of technology and business training solutions, covering the most popular applications today, such as Microsoft 365, Azure, Windows 10, and more. As a podcast listener, we invite you to take advantage of an exclusive offer. Receive 30 days of free access to our Microsoft official curriculum on-demand courses for IT professionals or end users. Visit us at www.directionstraining.com/podcast to claim this offer today. Hurry, this offer is only available for a limited time. Success is a journey. Ask for directions.